This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The YOLO economy. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, more young adults are giving up their stable jobs for some post-pandemic adventure. Their attitude after a year of work from home? You only live once. Also, as restrictions ease, baseball stadiums are expanding their menu options. Hear the unique creations. Plus, company talent shows are back, Zoom style, and that's gotten the creative juices flowing for some. We'll have examples. And a skeptic's guide to the Oscars.
It's going to look like probably no other Oscars before it, I think, for several reasons. One, because they can't gather in person in a big, beautiful place all together dressed up like they usually do. So they have to improvise a little bit.
John Jorgensen at the Wall Street Journal on whether you should watch the Academy Awards. We'll start with a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Something strange is happening to the exhausted Type A millennial workers of America. After a year spent hunched over their MacBooks, enduring back-to-back Zoom calls, yet flush with savings, some workers are quitting stable jobs in search of post-pandemic adventure. It's a story by Kevin Roos, tech columnist at the New York Times. Kevin, what are we seeing?
So we're at a really strange moment in the economy right now. We're seeing a lot of people who are obviously still struggling. They've lost jobs. They're sort of grieving over the pandemic. But there's this other group of people that I started hearing about a few months ago who were sort of in stable, cushy jobs and who were quitting them to go pursue passion projects or, you know, go back to school or start a business. They were taking more risks. And the sort of justification they gave was that their priorities had shifted during the pandemic. They had realized, you know, basically, you only live once. And so I started calling this the YOLO economy. Mm-hmm. And I started hearing from more and more people who were making these kind of abrupt career changes and kind of risking it all after a year of, you know, grief and anxiety.
Give an example. Who did something that really raised your eyebrows?
So I talked to one guy who's a young, he's in his late 20s, and he works at a major clothing retailer. And he recently decided, you know, his company was saying they had to go back to the office before June 1st. And he said, you know what? Then June 1st is my last day. I'm going to quit before then because I'm never going back to an office. So he made this Excel spreadsheet with all these options. He might take a coding class or move to the Caribbean or join a political campaign. And his basic thought was, you know, I'm not going back to what my life was like before the pandemic.
Wow.
And he sort of thought of this as a time to kind of reset his life.
Jeez. All right. So if folks who do this, they have the savings to, say, pay the bills in the meantime while something's developing? How does that work?
Yeah. So a lot of them have savings. They've saved money over the past year. And these are, you know, mostly people who are working in sort of higher paid industries. Maybe they have a nest egg. The stock market's been doing really well. So, you know, absolutely, these are people with the privilege of kind of looking at their lives and saying, what would I like to do? What would make me more fulfilled? But we're actually seeing this kind of attitude in more places than just the kind of upper class. Job openings are at an all-time high right now in a lot of industries. Many restaurants and trucking companies are having trouble filling open positions because people are sort of being choosier. They're able to do so because they have stimulus checks or enhanced unemployment benefits, and so they don't have to take the first thing that comes along.
Wow. We're speaking with Kevin Roos, New York Times tech columnist. His column is called The Shift. This one is called Welcome to the YOLO Economy. Employers, you said, too, are kind of fearful of this exodus. What are they doing or saying?
Yeah, absolutely. They are super worried about turnover. They're seeing, this wave of people quitting on the horizon. And so they're trying really hard to keep people happy. Some firms are giving people bonuses or extra days off. One Wall Street bank I wrote about just gave its employees all expenses paid vacations. So employers are really starting to worry not just about burnout, but about people actually quitting.
Wow. I was surprised, too, because you said it's, I think it was in the subheadline of your column that said it's in some cases millennials. I thought you're burned out already. You're young.
Exactly. Well, I think a lot of millennials sort of were taught that, you know, if they just went to the right school and got the right job and worked really hard, they would sort of move up and they'd be able to, you know, pay off their loans and enjoy their lives. And I think a lot of them are saying, you know what, I don't want to wait till I'm 45 or 50 to be able to enjoy my life. Yeah. I want to be able to do it now.
Wow. Who else did you talk to that kind of made one of those radical shifts in a career?
Well, I talked to a woman named Olivia Messer, who's used to be a reporter for the Daily Beast. And her story was not one of sort of going in search of adventure. She was really traumatized and burned out. She'd been covering the pandemic as a reporter. And so she just decided at one point, like, she was drained. She was out of gas and she needed to kind of recoup and recharge. And so she moved down to Florida. She's been doing, you know, painting and kayaking, and it kind of gave her a new lease on life. And so I think there are many reasons that people are deciding to kind of hit the eject button on their careers, ranging from sort of boredom to burnout and grief. But it's really happening all over the place right now, and it's got employers really scared.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin Roos, technology columnist at The New York Times. Coming up next, Major League Baseball stadiums change their menus. As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's BelaySolutions.com/deal. Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Most Major League Baseball teams and their food partners have been forced to streamline their menus to reduce wait times and line lengths as part of health and safety protocols, and for business efficiency. However, they do say they plan to increase menu offerings and open more food stands as the season progresses. So what can we expect? Here's Bill Shea, senior sports business writer at The Athletic. Bill, take us through this.
As the pandemic recedes and hopefully continues to recede in baseball and across all sports, we're going to start to see more traditional and bigger menus at stadiums and arenas finally. So it's a sign of things getting better.
All right. Why would the menus be expanding? Is this an anticipation that stadiums are going to be fuller? Because some are still operating with restrictions, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. All the ballparks this year went into the season with restricted or slimmed down menus simply because there weren't enough people in the stadium to justify having the full concession operations. And there's some behind the scenes stuff too. They can't get as many workers in. They don't need as many workers. Oh. And just the pipeline on the stuff they need for all of the ingredients and everything is a bit tougher in some places.
How critical is concession revenue perhaps this year?
Excuse me. Yeah, it's really important for teams. It's nothing will ever be as big as the TV money, the billions of dollars that leagues get. But teams get millions and millions of dollars every year from, food and concessions, all the hot dogs and beer and all the funky stuff. That's, they and their concession partners split that money to some degree. And after a year in which baseball lost over $3 billion in 2020, they're looking for money wherever they can find it.
Yeah. We're speaking with Bill Shea, senior sports business reporter at The Athletic. His piece is called Get Your Grasshopper Ice Cream, Major League Baseball Stadiums to Expand Menus and Bring Back Some Novelty Foods as Restrictions Ease. So on the novelty and exotic specialty front, what are you hearing?
Well, It's funny. The Texas Rangers, Globe Life Field, their stadium is at full capacity. They didn't come quite in with the full menu yet, but we'll be adding stuff. One thing that's not coming back yet is the rattlesnake sausage hoagie sandwich, which just sounds terrible, but it's not surprising in Texas. That probably will come back next year. In places like Seattle, where they have this ice cream with chocolate-covered crickets and crunchy mealworms, that's still on the menu. That was new this year. Fans love it. Apparently, fans up there have been eating chocolate-covered grasshoppers for years, and they love it out there. Not something I would try, but, more power to them. And here, I'm in Detroit, and there's some discussion of them bringing back the Little Caesars Coney Dog Pizza, which fans really apparently loved.
What is that? Can you even explain it?
Yeah, it's basically a small individual, like, four-piece deep dish pepperoni pizza. Well, it doesn't have pepperoni. It has slices of hot dogs, cheese, the chili or Coney sauce, some onions, and drizzles of yellow mustard. I had one when it debuted in 2017. I'm not a big mustard or Coney dog guy, but it was pretty good. I don't know if I would want to eat it at my seats on an August day in a packed ballpark. it wasn't bad. And I talked to the food folks at Comerica Park, and they said, it's something people want to bring back, so they may do that this summer.
It does seem like there's a lot of pressure on these the chefs these days, no, at ballparks?
Yeah, they fans have come to expect not just the funky stuff, although the chefs I've talked to, they like creating crazy stuff, and they kind of compete with each other to see who can do the wackiest, most interesting thing. But fans have come to expect just more than just like the hot dogs and burgers and nachos of yesteryear. They want things like authentic Mexican street tacos and ethnic and regional specialties and stuff like that. And yeah, it's not cheap. But then again, it's not cheap usually out in the real world either. But there's just a higher level of expectation. If you're going to pay all this money to go to a game, you want more than just like stale, semi-rigid nachos that you're eating on top of a garbage can in the concourse.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Shea, business writer at The Athletic. Coming up next, a guide to the Oscars. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Ask Dell.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Theaters were closed, big movies were postponed, and TV took over during the pandemic. But the 93rd Academy Awards could mark a turning point. Here's what you need to know, even if you haven't seen any of the nominated films, with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
After a year like 2020, does Hollywood really have anything to celebrate? We're about to find out with Sunday night's Oscars. Here with a preview is John Jurgensen from the Wall Street Journal. John, what is the telecast going to look like?
It's going to look like probably no other Oscars before it, I think, for several reasons. One, because they can't gather in person in a big, beautiful place all together dressed up like they usually do. So they have to improvise a little bit. There's good news and bad news on that front. I mean, the good news is they can do an in-person event that we haven't seen from other award shows like the Emmys or the Grammys, where and the Golden Globes, famously, where a lot of celebrities were on Zoom boxes and things like that. They're going to be doing this in person. But because it's been such a strange year in Hollywood and on television and everywhere, really, the producers of the show have kind of permission to really change things up a little bit. And I think they're going to try and run with that. The producers of the show say they're trying to make the Oscars look like a movie, not a TV show. So they're going to film it on film cameras. They're going to be using angles that are more familiar from movies and cinema. They call their presenters cast members. So they're really trying to make it look different than it ever has before.
These shows usually exceed well beyond 3 hours. Are they going to be able to compact it more this way?
You might think so, right? No, they are sticking with 3 hours. And that really comes from the fact that ABC, the network, it's a big opportunity for them to sell advertising. So they're going to sell as much as they can and fill up 3 hours. So it's going to run 3 hours. Hopefully it won't go longer than that. I think they have a little more control over this year than in past years. So, but definitely it's not going to be less than three.
John, the ratings for these shows have been pretty crummy lately. Do we expect this to be the worst ever?
I'd say that's a fair expectation. All the other big award shows that I mentioned have all had record lows this year, and there's no real reason to guess that the Oscars are going to buck that trend, especially in a year where a lot of the films that are nominated are not big pictures. You know, the box office was largely closed for a lot of the year. These are films that are smaller in scope and in audience. A lot of people haven't even heard of these films, much less seen them. So there's not really a lot of incentive to tune in. The one thing that they are trying to do, like I said, the changing things up with the style of it, you know, that's not something people are necessarily going to tune in for. So I think a lot of the network and the Academy, I'm sure, are bracing themselves for a record low.
We're speaking with John Jurgensen from the Wall Street Journal. John, how did the Academy decide what films would be eligible this year?
They really had to shake things up, and they made a decision earlier in the year to open things up, and they decided they needed to have the Oscars. And so in order to stay as the Oscars, they had to increase the window of eligibility. Films could premiere into February now instead of the end of the year and still be qualified. They could also debut on streaming, which is a first for the Oscars. They didn't necessarily have to come out in a movie theater like is usually the rule. So that really kind of opened things up. And in fact, you know, more movies were eligible for Oscars this year than any year since 1970, 366 or so. So it's a little surprising that in a year where we thought no movies were coming out, we actually have more movies eligible than ever. And that's due to this fact that they really tried to open it up and allow as many to qualify as possible.
You mentioned that we haven't seen a lot of these movies. What are some of the favorites?
Yeah, let's start there, I guess. Well, Nomadland is really the front runner for Best Picture. This film starring Frances McDormand as a woman, a worker who's kind of wandering the West in her van, living in the van and working around the country, kind of looking for meaning and work at the same time. It's a really kind of beautiful film, but a very meditative film, and it stars a lot of real-life people who live this lifestyle. So it's a really interesting picture. So that film and its director, Chloe Zhao, are really expected to do well this year. Other ones were, Netflix is well represented. This probably, if they're going to win anything this year, this is probably their year. Their picture, Mank, is the most nominated film of any. The Trial of the Chicago 7, which actually came from Paramount and came over to Netflix, is another one of their nominated ones. So the streamers are very well represented. Judas and the Black Messiah, which was on Warner and HBO Max and in theaters, the Warner Brothers film about the Black Panther Party in the 60s. That's another one, too. So all these films are really, really accomplished and great, but they are kind of narrow in their appeal. So it's not really surprising, especially in the age of tons of content that it competes with, that people haven't necessarily seen these.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter John Jurgensen with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. With Mother's Day coming up, I wanted to remind you about paintyourlife.com. If you're looking for a truly meaningful gift, they did one for me that my wife loves. A professional hand-painted portrait of our kids, one of our favorite photos, that Paint Your Life turned into a real work of art. I chose a world-class artist and worked with them to make sure everything was just right. It takes 5 minutes to order, and in about 3 weeks, you'll have a gift she'll cherish forever. I love their stuff. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money's fully refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off. That's right, 20% off your painting and free shipping. Just text the word DEAL to 64,000. That's DEAL to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Text the word DEAL again to 64,000. Terms apply. Available at paintyourlife.com/terms. Again, text DEAL to 64,000. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, fixing social media. Also, what Americans need to know about the red-hot real estate market. Plus, why 20-somethings are dressing like their grandparents. And the return of company talent contests. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, is social media fixable? In the beginning, social media promised to connect us to existing friends, help us form new relationships, and as a result, help make us find happier lives. But tech analyst Rob Enderle at the Enderle Group says the platforms have gotten away from that, opening the door to governments, fining them into obsolescence, or treating them like utilities with heavy government oversight, or even government control or ownership. Rob, what's the problem with social media?
Well, the big problem that they've got is the disconnect between who their customers are and who their users are. In this industry, there's kind of an old saying that says, if you don't know who's paying for the service, you might want to find out. Because they're undoubtedly doing something that you don't want them to do. And, and that's the case with social media. The folks that are the customers are the advertisers and the people paying for information about you. So they're the folks that want you to buy stuff you don't want to buy, the folks that want to manipulate you to do things you currently don't want to do. Those are the folks that are Facebook's customers. And it's not the user. And the end result is, that's why social media has kind of gone off the rails with regard to fake news and bias and all the nastiness that we see on the services. It's because they don't care about the users because the users aren't paying the bills. They only care about the customers, and the customers want all the data that they can get about you. It's kind of like a macro issue with regard to, for instance, what goes on with Fox. Tucker Carlson is the top-rated show, but it's probably the most biased program currently on television. But it's what people really like seeing, even though much of what they're hearing and seeing is false. And that's what's creating the problem. The people that want to take advantage of us, that want to take stuff from us, are the people that Facebook's catering to.
All right, and same principles for Twitter and Quora.
Yeah, even Quora is getting that way. I for some reason ended up on a conservative feed on Quora, and the amount of just total garbage that was coming through on Quora on that feed was amazing. I started complaining to them, and they took me off the feed. But at the end of the day, this dissemination of false information that's creating problems for people getting vaccinated, causing people to attack the Capitol, making people believe that elections were false, all this, excuse the term BS, it's very attractive because the people that want to believe that stuff are drawn to engaging on it and then talking about it. But the issue is, of course, it's doing the nation, I should say nations, a great deal of harm because people are making decisions on false premises, and those decisions aren't in their best interest.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. We're talking about fixing social media. What would you put in place if you had a chance to?
I think people should pay for the services that they use. I mean, if Facebook is valuable to you, it ought to be worth you paying money. And then the end result is, in turn, Facebook should then curate what it is you're receiving so that you're at least getting the truth. You can certainly make your own decisions, but where the accuracy of the stuff you're reading is made available. I mean, they're trying to do that with regard to notifications, but those notifications are very uneven at the moment, and the blocking and the rest of it they're doing seems to be uneven as well. You'll certainly see certain individuals highlighted and blocked, but then other individuals pop up and start telling the same false stories, and so it's more of a case of the social media sites trying to make it look like they're doing something, but really not trying to fix the underlying problem, because the underlying problem is generating revenue for them.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. Coming up next, buying and selling in this housing market. In the sport of business, we're all players, and with the game always changing, you need to be versatile. So does your wardrobe. You want both style and comfort to look as good as you feel inside the office or out. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you, from the boardroom to the bar to the gym. How? They reinvented men's clothing, starting with the t-shirt. Their Pika Tri-Blend fabric is buttery soft, wrinkle-free, and keeps its shape. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. Their polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. So versatile, you'll never need to take them off, and so comfortable, you won't want to. It's not just a lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. With any purchase, of course, we want to know if we're getting a good deal. But when it comes to buying a home in today's market, it's hard to answer that question. Reporter Jacob Passy at MarketWatch says Americans are laser focused on the state of the housing market as the country enters the peak spring home buying season. Jacob, explain.
Yeah, we're seeing a market where folks are encountering, you know, buyers are facing competition from, you know, dozens of other, you know, families. Sellers are attracting, you know, 10 plus offers for homes. Buyers are having to waive contingencies left and right. Prices are soaring. So it's a really, really, you know, competitive market out there. And, you know, unlike kind of anything we've seen in a long time.
How did we get here?
So it's a combination of factors. So to start, I mean, as folks are probably well aware, the pandemic has certainly changed people's preferences for housing. A lot of folks who were living in cities realized they wanted more space, and those folks may have, you know, moved to the suburbs a few years from now if there were no pandemic, but they decided to speed up the process and, you know, get a larger home. Now millennials are entering their peak home buying years and are, you know, getting married and having kids and wanting to buy homes. But then on top of that, since the Great Recession, home builders have been building new homes at a much slower pace and have not been keeping up with the population growth that the country has seen, basically. And so as a result, there's a massive shortage of homes out there right now, and that shortage of homes is now, you know, being met with strong demand, so that's, you know, creating more competition for the few listings there are, mm-hmm. and driving prices higher.
Well, so as you point out, and as most folks know, it's a seller's market, but you say it's more complicated than that.
Yes. So, you know, the struggle for sellers right now is, you know, if you want to, you know, upgrade your home, you know, or if you want to list your home for sale and, you know, take advantage of the high prices right now, you still have to find somewhere to live, and that's hard. So a lot of sellers are, you know, reluctant to list their homes because they don't know if they're going to find a home to buy and move to. So, you know, as ideal as it might be to sell a home right now, it's pretty complicated. The good news for sellers is the ball is in your court. You know, you control the game. So if you want to make the sale of your home contingent on you finding your next home, you can do that, and buyers will probably bend to your whim. But it's not so easy for sellers these days.
Wow. We're speaking with Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. He's written a piece about your guide to the hot real estate market. What about timing the market?
So timing the market is not ideal per se. I mean, it's just like the stock market, you know. It's not straightforward. There are risks involved. Also, with housing as opposed to stocks, you know, the transaction costs of selling a stock are pretty low. That's not the case for housing. You know, to sell a home, you're paying out commissions to real estate agents, et cetera. So rather than timing the market, you should be, you know, motivated by your needs and your desires.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Coming up next, young people dressing like old people. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for joining us. Well, thanks to Instagram accounts like @grandparents, millennials and Gen Z are coming to appreciate the fashion sense of their gray-haired elders. Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says wrinkles are in, and he means the kind on your face, not on your pants. Jacob, what have you noticed?
What we've noticed is kind of this idea that the elderly, you know, people that, let's say, senior citizens, you know, you want to go 60 and up, I suppose, to kind of put this in loose terms, are being heralded within the fashion industry for their idiosyncratic style. And let me kind of back up there, because I said fashion industry. It's not necessarily so much the industry as it is the, I would say, kind of fashion-conscious public.
Okay.
You know, the industry still lags quite a bit in terms of recognizing this, you know, elderly demographic, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, for people in the know, for people that are style watchers, so to speak, for street style photographers, for people that are kind of out there looking at, you know, what is stylish, they're really zeroing in on the elderly and kind of this idea that that way of dressing is very compelling right now.
Well, how did this start? Where did this come from?
You know, it goes back a few years now. It was interesting. I didn't get into the chronology of this in the piece, but you know, in fashion, we've had this idea of dad style. Maybe I wrote a piece about this a few years ago. You know, yes. Dressing like a dad. You know, you're kind of wearing the big New Balances. You're wearing the kind of washed out jeans, the flannel shirt, those sorts of things. And there's been this very pervasive notion of, I would say, the classics and kind of this traditionalism that's been running parallel to the fashion industry. You know, the fashion industry itself, the mainstream industry, is pretty frenetic right now. It's kind of logo driven. There's a lot of loud stuff happening. It's a lot of splashiness. And I think we're going to see even more of that, I would say, coming out of the pandemic. You know, people are really anticipating there's going to be a lot of kind of louder party clothes and kind of expressive stuff. But then you have this contingent of young people, 20, 30-year-olds, what have you, 40-year-olds, that are looking at, you know, the way a 70-year-old on the street might dress, that, you know, they've got on pleated corduroys and they've got on kind of just a worn vest, and they've got, you know, maybe, you know, if it's a woman, she's got maybe a floral sundress on. And these kind of classics are really compelling. I would say we've kind of seen that now going back maybe a decade or so, but it's really starting to shoot through with a lot of potency now.
You know, when you initially said that the 20-somethings or 30-somethings might be wearing it, I thought, are they awash in student debt and therefore can't afford new clothes and have to borrow grandma and grandpa's clothes? And is this like a coastal thing, New York, L.A.? I just haven't seen it, I guess.
Yeah, no. It's, you know, it's interesting because someone wrote me, a reader wrote in, and they kind of likened it to grunge in a certain way. Okay.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the return of company talent shows.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, we'll finish with this. The pandemic has raised the game in company competitions. While pre-coronavirus contests frequently featured communal skits and group challenges, in a Zoom era, they are often more solo affairs. The Wall Street Journal says some stuck-at-home employees are tackling them with zeal. 26-year-old Grace Haberman, who works at a credit union in Lexington, Kentucky, sang Fleetwood Mac's Landslide during her company's recent talent show while playing the ukulele. She was motivated by the $200 grand prize, she says, but came in third, claiming $50. Kiana Corliss is an employee at the data company Databricks, who's part of an informal Slack channel for Peloton workout enthusiasts. Employees frequently compete to see who can rack up the most monthly minutes on their machines. Still, defeat can sting. In a recent month, Ms. Corliss was bested by a colleague despite clocking more than 1,400 minutes on her bike. Her colleague did 1,800 minutes, and Ms. Corliss says she's still bitter. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.